Hi, I'm Pam. I'm an alcoholic. Getting my clock started. Wow, it's fabulous and exciting to see all these people with new to sobriety. And I, boy, when I was new to sobriety, I remember turning to the person next to me in the meeting and saying, "How long do you have?" And they said 3 days, and I said, "How did you do that?" Because I couldn't go 3 hours without a drink by that time. Now, I didn't start out like that. I started out with the top shelf and the high class places, and I ended up in within 10 years or less sitting on the street 5:30 in the morning in DT's waiting for the dive bar to open, because my life really deteriorated when I found alcohol. I thought that I had found the secret to life, though, the fountain of serenity, if you will. I loved what alcohol did for me. It gave me a sense of ease and comfort that I didn't have without it. And it gave me courage. It made me feel pretty, like I could dance, like I could sell things, like it just wow, crazy. And I loved it. I loved it. And so I drank at every opportunity, and I created more and more opportunities. And I started dating a bartender, and he told me that a morning shot would take over that hangover. And then from then on, I was work drinking 24/7. And short time after that, I got fired from my job. I found another job where I hope the person above me made it to this program too. So my morning, I was doing sales, and I was terrified. And so I would get up in the morning, and I would drive across the bridge into Kentucky, which didn't have state stores. It had liquor drive-throughs, and I would get a little plastic cup of ice and a Blue Bird orange juice and a half pint of vodka and make a screwdriver, feeling really sophisticated and healthy because, you know, I was having a named drink and orange juice, driving 85 down this narrow road, because I was late for work. And then my boss, the sales manager, would want to go to the bar about 10:30 in the morning so we could decide why we couldn't sell anything. And then the bartender I was there. Well, I was selling newspaper advertising, and I made all my clients could pick my own clients, so. I was doing a lot of bars, and I wasn't selling a lot of advertising, but I was getting a lot of double-double martinis free. As I would go in, they would give me a drink, and I would drink those. And then he had become my husband at the time. By that time, the bartender, I would go where he worked for lunch, and I would drink there free. And if I could make it back to work, we would go to that bar in the afternoon to decide why we couldn't sell anything. And then I would go and meet my husband after work and in the dive bar. And we would drink. It was 85 cents a double shot and 10 cents for a beer back. I rarely bothered with a beer back because I didn't care for beer. And I would think I'm going to go pick my I've got a 2-year-old or three by then, and I'll just stop for one drink or maybe two, maybe an hour, and then I'll go and I'll pick my child up from my mother's. And got in a tug of war with my mother one night as I was drunk, and she didn't want to give me my daughter, and so I enrolled her in a daycare that didn't involve my mother. That was my solution. Anything that bothered my drinking or attempted to control, I would fix that. So I coming home from the dive bar one night, my husband was arguing with me that he should drive because I was too drunk, but I had matched him drink for drink, and the car was in my name. So I said, well, security came and the car was in my name, and so I got to drive. And he took me back the next day, and he showed me where I had driven across ongoing traffic, up onto the sidewalk, knocked down the stop sign, and driven home. And he had to show me the red stop sign paint on my green car and the green paint from my car on the stop sign. I had no idea. So I hope I haven't killed anybody. I wouldn't know. I never thought a blackout was a problem. I didn't hear about them till I got an AA. I had to drink. Thought it was my solution. And so my solution to that problem was to move downtown where I could walk home from the dive bar and then go find my car in the morning. And that business where I had the salesman who supervisor who wanted to go to the bars for the sales staff went out of business in the middle of the night because they were trying to support several of us and we weren't doing very good at sales. And I'd already had my electric out because I was real good at living without electric because it was either pay electric or buy vodka, and vodka always won. Same with paying rent, vodka always won. And so, and then living downtown, I parked on the street a lot and I would just take the parking ticket off, put it in my glove box, come home, put it back on my windshield. I had a whole glove box full of those, and I parked in the honor lot next door, and I didn't actually put, well, I probably put a dollar in, but then never anymore. And they towed my car into an indoor lot they owned, and I couldn't afford to get it back. I didn't have a car. I drank through my unemployment, was getting evicted. I was using a window ledge for a refrigerator up on the 8th floor. And by this time, I had a 5-year-old, six, seven, something like that, at five, I guess. And I ran out of alcohol and I down 8 flights of stairs. I got her to sleep alone in the apartment, down 8 flights of stairs, across the street, up to the next corner, a couple of double shots, another couple of double shots, back home, up 8 flights of stairs because I ran out of alcohol and I had to have it. At one point, the only thing we had in the house was a bottle of wine with a cork in it, and I couldn't get the cork out. I broke the cork off. I just broke it off because I had to have the drink and drank it, even though there's broken glass. And I spilled some of it in the 20-year-old shag carpet and tried to suck it out of there. And then I got to the point where I tried to sell my blood. I was picking cigarette butts off the street, rolling my own. Try to sell my blood. I'm in the bloodline, feeling really superior to the alcoholics in the trench coats in line, and thinking how superior I am because I grew up in the country club and all, don't you know, and I was dressed better and whatever. And they bought their blood, but they wouldn't take mine because it was too full of alcohol. And I'd always been able to get it together to get my vehicle back or my job back or an apartment, a place to live, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And so at one point, I walked across the bridge to Kentucky with 85 cents I found in my couch to buy a half pint of vodka. And by the time I was halfway back to across the bridge to Ohio, I was NDTs again. So I like a good married 26-year-old, I called my mommy for help, and she said they would not pay for treatment, but they shoved a phone at me and said call Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did. The woman who came to get me was, I think, 19 and had 2 years sober, and took me to this huge meeting at a local clubhouse, and there were over 100 people there, and the man who gave a lead looked, he looked good, he had a professional job. I really related to how he felt. I felt like I had found my people until they got up at the end of the meeting and they, wow, and they said the Lord's Prayer. And my hopes were dashed because I didn't want anything to do, which I thought it's a cult and it's a religion, and I didn't want anything to do with that. Thank God. It's a higher power of our own understanding. So I had been, I sober for a little bit. I got an apartment back. They had parked my car on the street to get it towed. I just took my car back, and I got a job. And I got transferred to another city in the job, and I was doing pretty well. And the boss there wanted to have staff meetings in a bar, even though I had said I'm sober and I can't do this, whatever. And well, if I want the job, I'll go there. And he said, and the big book says that we can go anywhere provided we have a sufficient business or social or whatever reason to go there. So I justified it and I did that. Several times I did that fine. And I'm a bit of a workaholic, so I'm a lot I was a bit of a workaholic. I'm retired. And I started to cut down on my meetings and all of a sudden one night I ordered a double double vodka martini. That's code for four shots of vodka. It's cheaper and it sounds more sophisticated. And I only drank half of it, and I was singing on the way home because I thought I had found a way to drink successfully. And I was wrong. So within a short period of time, my electric was off. I got fired from the job. I was getting evicted. My car engine blew up, and I drank through my unemployment. I was out of ideas, and I walked to a payphone and I called Alcoholics Anonymous in the new city, and somebody came and got me and took me to a meeting. Now, I went to my first meeting, my first set of meetings, because my life was unmanageable. I went to my second set of meetings because I realized I was powerless over alcohol and that I was not going to be able to control and enjoy my drinking. I tried marijuana maintenance because I thought that wasn't my problem. It made me thirsty. Kitchen was all the way three rooms away, so I started hitting the wine that went around. I relapsed on beer once, even though I didn't like it. I tried everything, and I was out of ideas. And so I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought my life was over, and I prayed to a higher power, even though I didn't believe in one, because my sponsor told me to, and I believed in her. And I worked steps I thought shouldn't apply to me. I didn't have any resentments. I wasn't angry. I hadn't hurt anybody but myself. Oh man, a thousand forms of delusion. And wow. But I worked steps, and oh gosh, my first four step was a whole spiral notebook about what my stepmother had done to me. It was always somebody else's problem. It was never me. And I got a huge faith in a higher power by watching it work. And man, it would be things like I would run out of gas in the middle of nowhere, before cell phones, and there's no traffic. And oh no, and whatever. Oh, that flat tire was my first one. No traffic. I got nothing to do, so I pray. And this car comes along and he says, "Oh, you got a flat tire, I'll change it for you." "Well, my spare's flat." "Well, I think my spare would fit on your car, I'll sell it to you." "Well, I've got $6." "Okay, I'll sell you my car, my spare tire for $6. I get a brand new tire on my car for $6 installed, and off I go. That was one of my first, boy, God's pretty good. And I would pray not to run out of gas. I would run out of gas all the time, even if I had money in my pocket, because I wouldn't stop. And I would get the willingness to stop and put gas in my car. So I gradually got a faith in a higher power. Only the things that I felt I couldn't control, usually to do with vehicles. I continued to try to control a lot of my life, you know, to get the big job and all that stuff. So I want to share some of the things the higher power has done to me. And what I have learned about my higher power, it is loving, it is kind, it is patient, and it is polite. It always meets me where I am, and it will never interfere unless I invite it, because it has given me free will. And when I invite it, beautiful things happen. Things I could never have thought of. I didn't get the big fancy mansion I thought I needed. I got the adequate, run-of-the-mill, three-bedroom, one-bath house that they sold me on land contract because I had no credit. It's just amazing. And I got a vehicle that worked it fine. So at one point, I know I got 5 minutes, I want to share some God stories. I'm adopted. And it was a closed adoption. And after my father passed, I wanted to find my birth mother. And I asked my stepmother, and she said, "Well, you said when your dad died, you didn't want to know. So I threw it in the fire." I can tell you her name was Mamie. She was Wayne County, West Virginia. And she was some sort of professional, a nurse, a teacher, secretary, something like that. So I went around Wayne County, West Virginia, couldn't find her. So I went to the courthouse and they said, you have to give us $85, write a letter, $85. Why do you want to know? We don't really care. We just want the $85." But I didn't have $85. But I typed the letter up. By the time I had the $85, I thought, what if I find an alcoholic, drunk up a holler, and maybe I better not do this. So I prayed about it. And I left it up to the higher power. And sometime later, my son, who was 12, was supposed to go on a winter camp out, and my husband had to work at the last minute. So I took him to this state park in the snow, a couple of states away from where I live now. And on Sunday morning, I went to the camp store for something. They had a flat tire. They needed my tire iron. So all my stuff comes out and they use my tire iron. And then another camper comes. He's from down south, coming back from north. And he helps to get the tire off. And he's talking to the camp store person about Wayne County, West Virginia. And it turns out that he knew my birth mother, Mamie, and that she had passed a few years ago, and she had told him on her deathbed that she had given a girl up for adoption. Her name was Mamie Farrell, and that I looked like their family, and we exchanged, I've got goosebumps every time I tell this, and we exchanged numbers and got in touch and so on. And subsequent to that, I accidentally found my birth father when I wasn't even looking for him. So that's a longer story. Another story I want to share is my husband, that we got sober together, the bartender, he had relapsed. And I took my inheritance and bought a country store in a dry area to try to buy him a job that didn't have alcohol to keep him sober. And then I quit my job because I wanted to play store. And anyway, we screwed that up entirely, lost it, had to file bankruptcy, and our house was next to it. It was the house and the store, and neither one of us had a job. Oh, what are we going to do? I had two children in grade school by then, and I was really zen about it. The higher power is going to take care of us. It'll be fine. And months and months and months, and you never know when the sheriff's sale is going to happen. So one day I drove into a dead end of a state park, and I just started to cry and sob. God, I know I'm not supposed to ask anything specific, but I really need a sign because I'm really scared and I need a place to take these kids.
Two
To
minutes.
live, I need to know. And I left there, and on the way back to the home where we still lived, there's this sign at the end of a street I had passed that wasn't there before, and it said 3-bedroom house for rent. And I stopped, and the landlord was there painting it, and bang, I had a place to rent, and it was on Happy Lane. So that was my sign. So I find that when I invite my higher power, it always takes care of me in miraculous ways. And I could tell you God stories for hours. So one morning I woke up and I realized that the first thing I did when I woke up was look for the vulture on the bedpost. What crisis is in my life today? What do I have to worry about? And I prayed about that and I got the idea because I really run on asking for an intuitive thought. And I got the thought to go through the promises in my head, and I did. And I realized that all of them had come true for me. It does not say financial insecurity will leave us. It says fear of financial insecurity will leave us. And I got to the end of it, and I suddenly realized that God was doing for me what I could not do for myself. I was probably 20 years sober at the time. And then I realized that the easier, softer way was to turn everything over to the higher power. And when I do that, I have a great, great life. And that's my 20 minutes. Thanks for allowing me to share, and welcome to, wow, a new life beyond your wildest dreams. Just stick and stay. Thank you.